Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hey, this is Rabbi Sherry Hirsch, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Harry and Rose Sampson Family Jewish Community Center on Santa Monica Boulevard in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin.
Oh, my gosh.
I tricked you.
You did. I thought we were going to be in the Palisades or something.
No, we are on Santa Monica Boulevard in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin.
Did you know about that place when you were growing up in Milwaukee?
Yes, because my friend Evan
Gore,
who I've known since the first grade,
Gore.
This is where his family, they would do events there.
I see. Did you know? So you knew a couple of Jewish kids?
Yeah.
There, I didn't, you know, obviously there were Jewish kids growing up where I grew up in the suburbs of Pittsburgh. I'm sure there were. But, like, nobody talked about it. I don't know. It wasn't, I don't know. Or maybe there weren't.
Well,
there had
I don't
to
know.
Be.
Yeah, but if you didn't know it, if,
I was
if,
so
you,
don't,
if you never recalled anybody
Catholic
being on a holiday you weren't on, then probably in your neighborhood there didn't happen to be in.
Like, I was just Catholic. It was just so much Catholic going on. I couldn't
so
see
Catholic
anything else because I didn't even know. I didn't know there was anything else. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I've told you before. I remember my saying to my grandmother, because I don't even know what religion I wasn't raised in.
Right.
But I was like, hey, the guy, I'm trying to make conversation. They got a new pope. And she turns around. She's like, we're not Catholic.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to discuss religion with grandma anymore. This is not going well.
We would pass other churches in the neighborhood or, you know, in my suburb.
Presbyterian churches.
Right. Or a Lutheran or something. And I would say, well, mommy, what's that one do? What are they different? What are they doing? She goes, no, we believe the same thing. They just go about it in a different way. And I could think what she meant was Christian, as it were.
Oh, I think, okay. Well,
but
that
I'm
was
not
pretty
sure,
good.
But
she
I
could have been like, they're believe the same thing, but they're wrong. So they're all going to hell.
But, you know, anyway, all right. This is exciting because we are talking about, what are we talking about?
This is in honor of our first rabbi as guest.
That's
surprisingly,
right.
We've never had a rabbi on the show
325
before.
Episodes, no rabbis.
Wow.
Is this America? Are we in America?
Yeah, I think that we are obviously terrible people.
I am really thrilled that she's here,
horrible
you guys.
Things.
This is great. Rabbi Sherry Hirsch is here today, and she's got a couple of books on us that are very, very good.
Yeah, very good. Thresholds.
Thresholds is the new book that she has. Her first book, though, was called We Plan, God Laughs.
Yes.
That's See, just a great title.
No, but that's my, I mean, it's, I didn't make it up, obviously, it's an old saying, but that's my philosophy, as you know.
Except that you would never have the tenacity or the stick-to-itiveness to write a book.
That's got nothing to do with it. I'm saying the planning part.
I know, but
people
that's what I'm saying.
People plan and they think they've got control of things and they have control of nothing.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you therefore don't take action upon almost anything because you just figure I'm going to be screwed later anyway.
Yeah.
She's saying the opposite. I think you guys are coming at it from completely different angles.
What is she, positive?
Listen, she's a rabbi. She has information. And here's what I've learned about looking not only into her, but into the whole rabbi thing.
Yeah.
Can I say a rabbi thing?
The whole rabbi thing. Wow,
there's
spoken
only
like a true Catholic girl from Pittsburgh who never met a Jew until she moved to Los Angeles.
There's only like 400 female rabbis in the world.
I'm a little surprised by that, actually.
A religion that's been around for 3,000 years? 4,000 years,
yeah.
Something like that?
Hey, you know what that is? 400 more than there are female priests. So I think they're ahead by 400. I think they
win. So true. That's good. I like
that. I don't know if she'll want to discuss it, but the priest thing is, to me, like, just nutballs.
It's the craziest thing in the world.
I don't want to get into a theological discussion, but it's nutballs. That's what they used to say in the Old Testament.
Listen, I want to make sure that she understands
the lingo. We'll move forward. By the way, her name, Sherry, almost spelled like, so my fiancée Sherry is spelled S-H-E-R-R-I-E, which people usually spell wrong with a Y. But her name is spelled S-H-E-R-R-E.
Right. She just skipped
the
whole vowel.
She went one better.
She just
to
left
be like,
the vowel
nobody
out.
Will ever spell her name right.
Yeah, that's tough. That's got to be tough.
And I'm sympathetic, of course.
Okay, so listen, Rabbi Sherry Hirsch is here, and she brings forth the topic, The impact we make.
Yes.
The impact we make. And I love this topic.
You like to create an impact. You walk into a room and you leave a crater.
You know what's interesting? And I'll tell you what. I'm not saying that I know what I'm talking about, but I kind of know.
Neither is anybody else.
I kind of know what I'm talking about. And here's why.
Okay.
Because of the cancer survivor thing. As our audience knows, I'm a cancer survivor. And once you
God forbid they should forget for a minute. Let's bring it up again.
Once you get close and you're looking down the barrel of a, you know, I don't know how to say it. Once you get close to dying, everything changes. Yeah. So therefore, like, I am grateful in a way that I mean, I guess I am grateful that I had that experience.
You were like, I'm going to be an actress. I'm going to be an actress until you got cancer. And then you're like, oh, well, I guess I had to fucking leave Pittsburgh and actually go to Hollywood.
No, I'm not an actress by any means, but
well,
a performer, as it were.
Well, that was incorrect.
But
you didn't know what podcasting was back then. But you had a vision of some kind of thing that created no money.
What I'm saying in terms of making an impact is that, like, I really try to live in the moment. And I specifically do this with my daughter. So I'm very, very present in her life. You know, I teach in her classroom every week. I am the music leader of the Brownies. I am you know what I mean? Like, I was the president of the Moms Club, all those things. And I do that because I know that she's watching me. I know she is.
Yeah.
And I'm making, these are little tiny increment things that I'm doing, but I know it's going to add up. And so it's not only for her, but it's just living in the moment. And it is the most important thing for me to do right now.
It is.
I mean, when I'm here podcasting, this is where I want to be, and I look into the guests, I do pre-production, I do post-production, so I'm always working with the show. But I think it's about living in the minute. So
no,
I try
absolutely.
To do that
and
in
as,
every
and
facet
of my life.
And as
we've discussed before, I mean, not just you and me, but other people of our generation. Mm-hmm. It's like, we had a bunch of parents who were really not paying very much attention to us.
Yeah.
Really not.
Right.
Often just be like, okay, well, you guys go and we'll see you at dinner.
Right.
It's like that was it.
Right.
There was nobody like checking. I mean, that of course, some people have gone completely insanely the other direction where they, what do they call it, the helicopter parents.
Well, I know,
who
but
are
I guess
hanging.
What I'm saying is like, no,
you're not doing that. You're sort of a hovercraft parent.
Well, I'm trying to be present, not just for her, but because I want to be.
No, but
it's the most entertaining thing I can think to do.
Okay.
I'm just saying, no, listen, her childhood is so short, especially like those first 3 years. I mean, that was like, they're gone, and you can't get any of that back. And I barely remember it, and I never left her side.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean? Like, I was so close as
stay-at-home
mom.
But I think what you really hit the nail on the head is that you are aware that she's watching you all the time.
Yeah.
And I think a lot, our parents were not aware that we were absorbing what they were doing all the time.
And their passivity. How do you say that? Passivity. They were so passive. They weren't involved.
I would have been able to say it if you hadn't mispronounced it
Passivity?
First. Passivity.
Passivity was so apparent. And so they weren't involved. And my mother says now that they weren't encouraged to be involved, like in the classroom or anything else. They weren't even, it wasn't even like any, they got, nobody wanted their opinion.
Well, no, but you always have to go backwards because you think about their parents.
Mm-hmm.
How uninvolved were the, you know.
Even worse.
People in the, you know, I mean, it's like the fact that parents are involved now is considering two generations. Go 300 is ridiculous.
Yeah.
They were like, hey, you're 12. You need to get a job.
Yeah.
And help support us in the coal mine. Okay, maybe not a coal mine, but see what I'm saying.
In Pittsburgh, where I'm from, I mean, you know, my niece's husband is a coal miner. I mean, that's not unheard of. I'm just saying, from the Midwest.
I know, yeah.
My
I don't
point
know. I don't
is,
know why
here's what
that's
I'm saying.
So stereotypical that it made me laugh.
Here's what's important. If you're a happy mother, you have a happy child. And I want
to.
I'm
You'd
trying
like to think
really
that,
hard.
You?
Well, no, I really think that. I do think that.
I think that
think
this
that.
Is true in your case, but unfortunately, there are children who are unhappy and they have happy parents. It's a sad thing.
Wait. Say that again. There are children.
I think there are perfect. It is perfectly plausible for people to be. Here's me being all negative. For two parents to be absolutely perfect, and their kid is still fucked up.
Well, their kids, their parents aren't going to be happy and perfect if their kid is fucked up.
Oh, well, no, they're drunk. I'm sorry. Did I not mention that? I completely forgot the drunk part. I'm sorry. I left
drinking.
That important
Gosh,
part
darn
of the
it.
Story.
You forgot about that. My point is that I think that's what she's talking about in terms of making an impact. So it's the small things we do, and it adds up. It's a process. Life is a process. It's not like, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to get a job on a sitcom, and then that's it. My life is perfect. No, it's not, because that sitcom's going to get canceled. Everything gets canceled at some point.
Right.
So, it, like that.
By the way, I'd like that problem.
There is no. I got there, and then I was invited to the Oscars, and then I won the Oscar, and then I went to the after party. But then Taylor Swift just left. Not that I wanted to see Taylor Swift.
Wow.
Ben Affleck just left.
That was almost a rabbinical tale of tragedy. You know, and then Taylor Swift left. And this is, I can hear Jackie Mason on The Simpsons in my head telling the story of Taylor Swift leaving the party.
Anyway, the point is, it's exciting. I'm thrilled to talk about not only the subject, the impact that we make, but also more of an impact than we think we knew. Right, and her book, Thresholds, we'll talk about that as well. It's a really interesting concept. It just came out very recent. This month, I believe.
The ink is actually smeared on the copy she was
giving. It's a quick read, I'll say that. So that's a lot of fun. All right, you guys. But before we bring on our guest, Rabbi Sherry Hirsch, I did want to mention that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, that would be great.
That would be great.
What do you do?
You could do it. Well, you could do it inadvertently, but not inadvertently, sort of passive-aggressively. Just tell your friends.
There you go.
Tell your friends to like us. Tell your friends to find us. Tell your friends to subscribe to us.
You know, not that many. I mean, I don't know what the percentage is, but I'm going to throw it out there. 15% of the people in the country listen to podcasts.
Yes, 15%. But they're the most important 15%.
20%? I mean, a lot of people still don't understand how to do it, how to get it, how to download it. So but you just have to tell them, you know, Stitcher. Just go to Stitcher.com. Just go to SoundCloud. Just get the app.
You know what? I think iTunes really is the way that the vast majority of Americans still... Yeah. You know, everybody's got iTunes.
But all I'm saying about iTunes is that if you don't want to download the show, right, if you want to listen in real time, that's where Stitcher comes in handy.
No. You know what I like? SoundCloud.
I like SoundCloud.
You know what I enjoy?
What?
Napster. It really doesn't help with the podcasting, but it's so much fun.
Here's what would help as well.
You know what? I for some reason, by the way, a million years ago, I was on Match.com, right? Yeah. As was everybody in America. And they've started sending me emails again, like they dug me up, like they must be desperate. Like, let's find people who haven't been on Match.com in 15 years.
Yeah.
And try and see if everything fucked up for them and they're alone again. And we'll see if we can get them to come back. It's like, matches are waiting for you. Really? On my 15-year-old profile?
Yeah, I'd like to read that 15-year-old profile.
With the black and white headshot?
That would be a really funny thing, like a sketch to do with other comics, right? To do a night of your profile 20 years ago or whatever. And just read profiles from... just read people's special skills on the back of their
that's always amusing.
Special skills are quite entertaining.
And by the way, we got off the topic. We need your support. Hey, you could even give us money directly if you want.
Yeah, you can do that. We do have a Patreon ad going on, and some people do that. They give us $2 a month, $3 a month.
Yeah, go to patreon.com. We're fabulous.
Better yet, why not just go to storyworthypodcast.com, and you'll find all the info there on how to follow us on Twitter and Instagram and all that fun stuff. All right, you guys, wherever you are, stick around, because Rabbi Sherry Hirsch is on her way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have Chief Creative Officer of Big Story, Mike Bonifer.
And I'll be talking about how I found Bill Murray.
That's next time on Storyworthy. Hey, Christine, tell everybody about our social media consulting business.
Well, Hannes, we have learned so much over the last 5 years doing Storyworthy about social media, and we've had so many guests on the show that have given us their tips and ideas.
Yeah.
And so now we are sharing our experience with others. We've started a new social media consulting business, and if you email us at info@storyworthypodcast.com, I'll be happy to fill you in on exactly what we're able to do for you.
Yeah, we can increase your social media footprint.
Exactly.
Footprint.
Exactly.
Footprint!
Again, email us over at info@storyworthypodcast.com, and I'll be happy to email you a rate sheet.
All right. You're listening to Storyworthy. And it's a wonderful show. And when I hear worthy, you know, I have problems right away because, of course, I have a problem with self-esteem.
Street a little bit in Whitefish Bay on Silver Spring Drive. We're now at the Fox Bay Cinema Grill. Fox Bay is an old theater I used to go to all the time.
Yeah.
But now it's a cinema grill, so you can sit and eat food
while watching
right now Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine a worse fate than eating a pathetic steak from the cinema grill while watching Fantastic Four.
Do you think they serve steak?
Well, the same way Sizzler serves steak. It's meat.
I see.
It's not, not exactly Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
But I have been to one of those theaters where there's like the reclining chair and then they bring like a meal and a lunch tray. I like to separate my entertainment.
I think, yeah.
Like, I don't want that kind of a meal.
And if you give me a margarita and a reclining chair.
Yeah. What?
That's the movie. What? It's like, I could just, can I just go home and sleep?
Can't we just get a Diet Coke and some popcorn? Like, what's wrong with that? Who had the big complaint? Like, I'm so hungry now. You know, like, why?
Well, who are the morons who are like, you know what I'd like to do is text the whole time while I'm in this movie. It's like, could you be anywhere near the moment that moment that you were talking about living in?
Yeah, I guess so. Why are we talking about movie theaters?
Because we left the JCC and we went to the Fox Bay. Right, and I went to many movies at the Fox Bay Theater with Evan, who I've known since the first grade Gore.
Yes. Right. All right,
friend
you guys.
Of the show.
She's here right now, Rabbi Sherry Hirsch. All right, now this is interesting, Hannes. She served as a rabbi at Sinai Temple here in Los Angeles for 8 full years.
Yeah.
And now she currently works as the spiritual life consultant at Canyon Ranch. Do you know the Canyon Ranch, Hannes?
I'm not familiar with the Canyon Ranch. I imagine it's in a canyon and has a ranch-like structure.
We'll ask her about it.
Okay.
All right. She's also the author of 2 books, like I said, We Plan, God Laughs, and her current book published by Random House, Thresholds, How to Thrive Through Life's Transitions, and that is available right now. Now, she has served as a spiritual commentator for the Today Show, and you can find her at sherryhirsch.com and also on Twitter at Sherry Hirsch. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Rabbi Sherry Hirsch. Delighted to be here. You're hilarious. So I was a latchkey kid. For those of you that don't remember what that was, it was literally a child that had both parents that work. And the reason we got this nickname, latchkey, was because we wore our house key around our neck. And since both my parents worked and I thought I was way too cool, I did not wear my key around my neck. I wore it pinned to my Jordache. So you can imagine that I thought I was something cooler than life with my key pinned to my Jordache while my parents were work. So sure enough, every day after school, I, along with the 2 other latchkey girls, were dropped off at a woman's house named Shirley Kolodny because she was the quintessential stay-home mother. And the carpool would drop us off, we'd walk to her house, and there she would have waiting these amazing Jewish cookies called rugelach. They're like chocolate and cinnamon, and she had just baked them in a big thing of milk. And we would plop at her table. She'd put them in front of us. And since we were preteens and tweens, we never once asked her about her, but she would listen to us ad nauseum. I mean, every drama that you have when you're 12 and 13, from this boy doesn't like me to I have little boobies, should I wear a bra or should I not wear a bra? She would listen and listen and listen. And I never thought much about it. I thought, she loves doing this. Who doesn't want to listen to 3 teenagers all afternoon? And then when my parents got home, sure enough, I would walk home to my home and let myself in, and there would be my parents. And she became my listening ear for most of my childhood. And you talked about parents as not caring. It's fascinating because my parents cared. They just worked a lot. And when you work a lot trying to make a living, you don't have much time. So fast forward, I'm much older and I'm at a wedding. And who do I run into at this wedding but the 2 other girls? Now you have to know, one of the girls, her mother was a doctor. One of the girls, her mother was a lawyer. And my mother was the stylist for Nordstrom's. Now, you need to know what that is. That means people would come to her, and she would shop for clothes for them, and she would get them all fancied up, and then basically she bought clothes for other people. So we're at this wedding, and what are the 3 of us talking about? We're not talking about all the letters behind our name, because by now everybody's gone to college. Even some of us have gone to graduate school. We're talking about Shirley Kolodny. We're talking about the rugelach, how she listened to us, how she never criticized us, how she always felt totally present for us. Now, you have to know, the girl whose mother was a doctor, she now is becoming a physician. And the girl whose mother was a lawyer, she now is becoming a judge. And then there's me. The girl whose mother was a stylist for Nordstrom's, was a fashionista, is now becoming a rabbi. So we're clearly not on the same page. So after the wedding, I go home and I think to myself, God, you know, people make an impact on your lives. They've said something once to you and it stays with you for a lifetime,
or something happens and you never forget it. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to call this woman. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to call her, find out where she is, call her, and let her know the impact she made on my life. So I find her number, and it turns out we used to live in Los Angeles. She now lives in Deerfield, Massachusetts. And I get her number, and I call her up, and I said, hi, this is Sherry Zwilling. I don't know if you remember me, because now I'm Sherry Hirsch, so I don't want her to get confused. And she said, oh, yeah, I know exactly who you are. I know exactly who you are. You know, I always follow what you're doing, and I always stayed in touch with your mom. Oh, lovely, lovely. And there's a pause, and then I say, Shirley, I just wanted to thank you for always listening. And on the other side of the phone is dead silence. And what I think to myself is, God, I should have let in with, like, how are you? What's going on? What's your life like? But I just jumped right in. Silence. I'm not really sure what to do. Her husband grabs the phone. And he says, Shirley can't take the phone right now. She's weeping. And I thought, she's weeping? And then I said, why? And he said, because her whole life, she thought she was just a housewife. She thought she was not worth much. And yet in this very moment, you let her know she was worth so much more. And I thought about all the times that we make an impact and we have no idea that we've made it. And so I wanted to say to her, but I ended up saying to her husband because she wouldn't get back on the phone because she was bawling, was, thank you. And that's what I tell people all the time is, thank you. Thank you for making an impact on my life, and thank you for making an impact when you don't even know you're making an impact. So I look forward to discussing it with you guys.
Is that how you sign your books?
Impact?
Yeah. Like, no, when you sign your book to somebody, do you sign it like, thank you for making an impact on, or thank you for letting me make an impact on your life or something?
No,
like
I
that.
Always, you know, it's interesting when I sign most people just sign their book because they just want to get it done. I like to listen to people and then write, but people get really annoyed with me because the line is very long and I'm sitting there. Yeah. But I always write something like, you know, cross the threshold in front of you. This is a moment, you know, something
that's
that really
sweet.
Goes to the book and to what they're about to read.
What made you think of the word threshold to begin with?
Well, I always feel like we're at these threshold moments. Like when I first thought of threshold, it was when you get married.
Oh, yeah, crossing the threshold.
Crossing the threshold. But, you know, my husband did not lift me up. My God, I think I would have – he's so thin. I think I would have crushed him. But sure enough, I thought there's all these moments where we are leaving one room that's incredibly comfortable and we land into a place that we don't know where we're going.
Right.
And every one of them is a threshold. And so it just kind of felt
like actually,
it was right.
We don't use that word ever except in the context of marriages.
Right, and I think it needed it seems like it's broader than that, and it needed a lot more than that.
Yeah.
And I read your book. Well, actually, before we get into the book, because I definitely want to talk about that.
Yeah, before we get into the book, I want to say I love arugula.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Is that like a pastry?
It's like a rolled...
like a lady
It's not phyllo dough, but there's a lot of chocolate.
A lot of chocolate. And, you know, I had a taster test with my kids, because I wanted to see if Shirley Kalani's was really the best, or it was just my memory.
Yeah.
She won hands down.
And by the way, I just have to say, I had my first from Trader Joe's, so it's not exactly authentic. My first chocolate babka, famous from, of course, Seinfeld, which is technically my Bible, the famous chocolate babka, and they don't get the chocolate babka, and they have to get a cinnamon babka. And Jerry's like, this is bullshit. That's not what he says, but basically implying cinnamon babka, nothing compared to chocolate babka.
Interesting. And I don't remember that episode. I mean,
I remember
the cake, and I remember a lot of other
ones. And they don't have the number, and it turned out, and they're fighting with people, we were here before you, and then it turns out they know them, and they're going to the same party, so it's all very uncomfortable. And they get the chocolate babka, and they get a cinnamon babka, but it has a hair stuck to it. So they have to return it.
Trouble.
And there's no more babka at all. So now they have, you know.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed.
Oh, I have watched Seinfeld either way too many times or not enough times, depending on
you. I don't know if you should be impressed, I'll be honest with you.
No, I think it's impressive.
No, he should be impressed. She should be impressed because I have such a memory for completely useless television facts.
It's true. It's true.
It's true. But
it seems not useless.
Rabbi, let's back this up.
Not.
I got to back this up. Shirley Kalodney, she's in Massachusetts now?
She's in Deerfield, Massachusetts. So when I talked to her, she was about 65. Now I'd say she's closer to 80.
Uh-huh.
I've gone to visit her since then. We've rekindled the friendship. And actually, my mother passed away about 5 years ago. And she always emails me, which is kind of, her children tell me, is quite a feat because she never learned to use email until she wanted to contact me.
That that is so
sweet. They didn't like it.
Yeah, there
Frank
you go.
Up.
Yeah. And so when you write a new book like Thresholds, do you send her a copy?
Always.
Or you do?
Yes, always.
That is so sweet.
Yeah, I always send her
and
a
then,
copy.
And then does she ask about, well, what's going on with the other friend? Is she a lawyer? Is she a judge now? Or does she ask about the other women?
She always asks about the other women. She's like such a darling, sweet woman. And I think everybody needs a Shirley Kalodny in their
so
life.
Did she
always ask.
Did she have a good life, do you think?
I think she had a wonderful life. I think she has children that made her proud.
Your old savings and loan.
Right.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it.
But her husband passed away about 2 years ago, and I think she misses him dearly.
Yeah, of course.
See, that was funny because it was like we have these impressions of people. Like you, when you told the story, I got the impression that it was just, I had the idea that it was much more recent and that she was much older. And now I realize it was a while ago and she was only 65, which used to sound really old to me, not sounding so old to me anymore.
Well, yeah. Anything and within like, 10 years of your own age is never going to sound old, you know?
I'm not quite. It's damn closer than that. Damn it. Hang on, so I have to take a nap.
Did Shirley make you guys snacks and lunch? I mean, she was getting paid. Yes?
No, she wasn't
getting paid.
She was not getting paid. She was a good friend of my mother's, and she didn't work. And so we just got dropped off there. Oh, no. It's so funny that we can't even imagine someone doing something so altruistic without even paying them. Because in this day and age, right, you got to pay for the caretaker, you got to pay for
and
the babysitter.
And we can't imagine somebody just deciding, all the parents deciding, but not really even deciding, they'll hang out with Mrs. Kalodny.
Right, we were
it'll
like,
be fine. It's like we won't check up on her. Right. We won't do a background check.
They have now like that Uber for kids. You can get your kid. I forget what it's called.
Hop, skip, drive.
That sounds like a nightmare.
You can have
I've
your kid picked up and taken to school and picked up at school and
by some stranger. This is insanity.
No, it's not a stranger. It's hop, skip, drive. It's an app.
You know
how could it be wrong?
How could it be wrong? It could be wrong. You know how
Honest,
many
I'm
people?
Kidding.
No,
the
I know,
point
but
is,
how many?
No, but this is another way. Parents who work a lot. You know, they're basically, they've got cab drivers for their kids to take them places back and forth. And then after school, they take them over to Shirley Kalodny's.
But we never did that, right? We just like, we didn't vet them. We didn't have an FBI check on each person. We just like, who knows who we were with.
And so what were your parents doing that kept them so busy?
Well, my mom was a stylist for Nordstrom.
Right, so she was.
And then, you'll like this, my father had a store in the Peninsula Center, for those of you from Palos Verdes.
I don't like that.
You don't like a store?
No, I'm kidding. You told me I would like it, so I have to tell you.
You know what we sold?
Like it. Okay, it's Palos Verdes, which is
south of L.A.
Headed toward, near
Playa
Long Beach, but nicer.
Nicer. And we had a little store, and we sold light bulbs and light fixtures, and it was the one store in town. And I started working there when I was 9 years old.
So you grew,
I know light bulbs really well.
You grew up right here.
I grew up right here.
That's really interesting. And so always
lived in
California.
Wait, did you live in Palos Verdes or did you live
I grew up in Palos Verdes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was really good at
the store was there. Okay.
Yeah, I'm really good at lamps and light bulbs. I could tell you a lot about wattage.
We just changed the lighting here at Sideshow Network, Maria, and don't think I haven't noticed that. I do appreciate it.
By the way, by we mean we came in and it was different one day.
Well, yeah, honest. They're not going to say, hey, why don't we get the Storyworthy podcast hosts to change the light bulbs?
Good, because we'd all be dead now.
Right.
The building would be a cinder.
You grow up in Southern California. Mm-hmm. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one brother.
And what does he do?
He is married. He is a lawyer, but he sells... He's a Silicon Valley guy. He sells companies. He just sold his fourth company to AOL.
Gosh.
He's done well.
Always amazing.
Is he single?
I know every Jewish mother
Christine's
out there
looking.
Is like, no, he's married and he has kids and they're cute as can be.
I am not looking.
I know. I just wanted to...
He would be good for you, though.
Yeah.
So, listen, oh, really?
Yeah. He's good looking. He's smart.
Really?
I could be looking. I don't know.
Honestly,
I'm just trying to help.
This is
good.
We need an influx of cash into the story where the podcast basically is.
When did you decide I'm going to become a rabbi?
Right, because it's like a great job for a nice Jewish girl.
But how do you even conceive of this?
Better for a Jewish girl than a Catholic girl.
Well, the funny part is I have 14 rabbis in my family.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to know that I am completely a black sheep because women did not become rabbis. And when I announced at the dinner table in the 8th grade that I wanted to become a rabbi.
In 8th grade?
Yeah. My father said to me, like hell over water. Like or hell freezes over. I'm not even sure the term. But he could not believe that I would want to do something so rebellious. Isn't that funny? Because becoming a woman rabbi was so rebellious in my family.
Oh, wait, okay, when was the first woman rabbi? Have there been in the past or the past 100 years?
No. So in 1975 was the first reform rabbi. And in 1985 was the first conservative rabbi. Those are different divisions of Judaism. So I was number 60 in the conservative movement.
That is so interesting.
But the weird part is when I was 14 and announced it at the dinner table, women were not rabbis. I was already thinking ahead of the time. And then when I got older and told my parents that I wanted to be a rabbi, they were horrified.
So what was your interest in eighth grade?
I'd always been studying Judaism. I came from a family that practiced religiously and thought theologically. That means we went to synagogue on Saturday morning and then we went out for shrimp sushi.
Were you Orthodox or
no? No. Shrimp sushi is not Orthodox.
Hey, wait a minute.
No, I understand. That's what I mean.
Kosher.
So you didn't grow up in a strict Jewish
No, not
Jewish
a strict
family.
Observant home, but we were very theological. Like, we always had very serious discussions and it was always about Judaism and we went to synagogue and we had Friday night dinner.
So it's your parents' fault.
Yeah,
it really
it's their
is
fault.
If they hadn't started all this serious discussion.
Right, but the scary part is when I said to them, I'm going to be a rabbi, you know what the first thing my mother said after years of talking the feminist talk? She was like, who will marry a woman rabbi? I was like, what happened to all the feminist talk, all the career stuff?
Yeah.
She didn't.
You know, when
I didn't believe it.
You know, that show Transparent, of course, is really hot right now, and it's just so good. Hannes, did you start watching Transparent?
I do not have that service.
Oh, Amazon Kindle.
I don't have Amazon.
Or Amazon Prime, it's called. I've literally.
But Jeffrey Tambor,
I've literally gone through the series. I think there's 10 or 12 episodes. I've gone through it three times. Like,
really?
I can't get enough. Well, first of all, it's shot in my neighborhood, which is sort of interesting because you never get that perspective of LA.
Yeah.
Every time I see, I recognize things, which is kind of fun. But all the characters are so fascinating. And they're so flawed, and they're so honest, and they're so real, and there's a female rabbi, and you sort of look like her.
Oh, okay. I was wondering where you were going with this.
You sort of look like her.
That's so funny.
And I thought, wow, I wonder if on that show, because you have quite a resume, and you've been around, and you've been on shows, and you were the rabbi here in Los Angeles for 8 years. So maybe they took it off.
Who knows? You know, I've been told by some of the producers that. I don't look like what they thought of as a rabbi. And now that women rabbis are sort of infiltrating American culture, that I'm sort of what they're hoping.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that means.
Well, on the show, the rabbi is very beautiful on the show.
Thank
You're
you.
Very beautiful.
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting, I don't know, it's just kind of very popular. It's very happening now.
I think that's wrong of you to put the image of hot rabbi in my head. That was wrong. I feel that I'm going to be damned now to some hell. I'm not sure which one.
Okay, so now let's go to the book. So real quick, one more time about Shirley. So you are in contact with her. She reads your books, and she did make this impact just by being a listener.
Just by being a listener.
Did you guys ask her about clothes or, you know...
No, we asked my mother about clothes.
Oh, I see, because
your mom
was the stylist.
And,
so.
And like, if we had a cold, we asked
Did you ask Shirley the embarrassing questions that you did not want to ask your mother?
No, she was very prude. Shirley, I hope you forgive me for that. But she was very prude. My mother was only 18 years older than me. So my mother was the one you went to for all sort of the...
The stylish. That's the whole style.
The puberty and like sex and all that stuff. But Shirley, you asked about life. Like, what should I be when I grow up?
Yeah.
Like, this boy doesn't like me. How do I handle this situation? This girl cheated off me.
Well, your mom had you when she was 18 years old, so she was a child.
She was a child.
Your mother was a teenager when she had you.
Yeah, my parents met when they were 14, and when they had my brother and I, they were 18 and 20. And I always joke that they were children raising children.
They were.
Yeah.
Wow, so no wonder why you had to go out to Sherry and have a listener, like, or to Shirley.
Yeah,
and she was considerably older than my mother.
I just want to ask one thing. I'm trying to remember. Okay, so you're conservative.
Conservative.
And then, but to the right of conservative, I don't know if to the right is the right thing, is Orthodox, correct? Orthodox is more, even more conservative than conservative, right?
Yes. It's,
yes, which is confusing.
People think in America there's like four main denominations. There's Reform, Reconstructionist, Conservative, Orthodox, Reconstructionist, nobody hears about.
Because I thought there were three.
Right.
Okay.
There's like 600 denominations. Each one has like, it's basically every Jew has their own denomination.
No, wait a second. Because I don't know much about the Jewish religion at all, although now I have so many of my friends are Jewish. I mean, it's like everybody's Jewish and or went to Emerson College. That's the connection right there.
And for the Jewish
Maria
and went there, Maria went to Jewish College.
Yeah, she went to
Emerson. Nice Jewish girl.
No, but I'm just saying there's two paths, it seems, out here. Everybody's from Boston. The point is, when people go to temple on Sunday.
Saturday.
I'm so sorry. When
no worries.
People go to temple on
Saturday. Wow, this is uncomfortable.
Then they are not practicing the same thing, or they are practicing the same thing. When you're saying 600 divisions or four divisions, that's just a very personal choice, but there's one service.
Right. So this is the way I always explain it, Christine, is that there's one God, and we all agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
And how you reach that doorway is what everybody disagrees on. And Jews have opinions, right? Everybody has opinions, but Jews have particularly extra opinions.
No, they don't.
Right? So because of that, you have everybody thinks this is the way to do it or this is the way to do it. So if you had 10 synagogues on a street, you'd have 10. They could all be conservative and they'd all be doing it differently.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
that's so interesting. And the other thing we don't do is we always come late. Christians never understand that.
What's fascinating to me, though, is like, okay, so I grew up in Catholicism, but I haven't been to church since I was 15. But I know every prayer. I know the entire service because it's identical in every language and everywhere in the world. So if you go into a Catholic church in Italy and it's in Italian, it's still the same mass as when you go here in the United States.
Right.
Wherever
and
you
up
go,
until
it's the same.
Very recently, by which I mean 30, 35 years ago, it was always in Latin.
Yeah, so longer than that. But the point is very little changes except the sermon, which is when the priest talks about what they want to talk about. Yeah. But other than that, it's a call and response, and I have that ingrained in my head forever. So, which is another reason why I never understood why I had to go to church. I'm going to hear the same thing they said last week. But so Judaism doesn't have any of that.
No, it does have that. It has a set service, but how it's played out and what tunes and how everybody does it is different.
In
terms of music, but every week there's a set Torah reading, and it's the same across the world. But some people read a piece of it. Some people read all of it. Some people read three chapters of it.
I see.
So there is definitely a universal aspect, but it really is confusing.
And then what happens on Fridays at sundown?
So we observe a 25-hour day of rest from 18
But by
minutes.
We, you don't mean every Jewish person in the world.
No.
You mean some.
No. But the concept of
this is the one
Jewish
I want to join. This is the one I want to join.
Right. So 18
where you
minutes.
Can stop working on Friday.
yeah,
that's
totally.
What you're looking
for. You don't. Yeah, there is. You don't even tear toilet paper in certain communities. I mean, it's super religious. But we tear toilet paper.
Why wouldn't you tear toilet
because
paper?
Because you don't want to destroy anything.
So how do you create or destroy? What do you do if you have to?
Roll it, cut it, and set it down.
So that you're ready to go.
Or you get that kind. Do you remember when you were in the fifth grade and they had the toilet paper that had the individuals and you had to, like, take them down? Or you
this
do
is,
that?
By the way, this is the entire point of your book, We Plan and God Laughs. He's laughing at the plan where you cut up the toilet paper and go, I had quite a brisket. I'm going to need a tremendous amount.
Fascinating. No, this, I am truly fascinated.
Oh, so eight, wait, you got to hear. So 18 minutes before sundown.
18 minutes before sundown.
You light the candles.
Wait, first of all, you haven't worked all day.
No. Friday you work.
The sun going down is the demarcation.
Okay, that's the demarcation. Okay. You light the candles, and then for 25 hours. Now, this is not every Jew. Everybody does it differently. But for 25 hours, you don't create or destroy. So you're not planting something, and you're not cooking something, and you can't even kill a bug.
I never heard it explained that way. This is fascinating. So you are neither. You're not doing anything. You are neither creating or destroying.
Right. It's not like you're sleeping all day.
In the world.
You're being in the world without creating or destroying. So it's not like you're sleeping all day. Like some people are like, oh, I'm just going to take the next 25 hours and sleep. It's not that. It's really that you're being present for this moment.
Can you use a computer?
No.
Can you use a telephone?
No.
Can you use
I mean, people do.
Yeah.
But in the very traditional settings, no.
Can you juggle? No.
Can you have relations with, intimate?
So I'm so glad you asked that. Actually, it's what's called a double mitzvah. You get twice as many points if you do it on Friday night.
Wait.
I know.
Wait, right. Who's keeping score?
Wait, well.
God.
But
Maria has a list over there going right now. I've got three
right,
check marks.
But if you think
Maria's
about it,
like, I was eating fish the whole time. This is all what I should have been having.
But
relations.
If you think about it, I mean, if you have a lot of time and you're not doing other things, I mean, what do you want to be doing when you actually have real
free
time?
You use candlelight, you're sitting
in the
mood.
So they do want you to have sex.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so
we're
really
all about sex.
Sometimes I find, not just the constraints of Judaism, but of all religions, I find it very confining and very like, oh my gosh, it's like everybody's telling you no. But then on the other hand, I think in myself like, well, it'd be interesting to live within those constraints because then you wouldn't have to think about a lot.
I think it's interesting the way you see constraints, right? Because some people see, if you say it's a restriction, for other people it's a freedom, right?
Yeah, in other words, it's a freedom because then you just don't have to think about it.
You don't have to think about it. But I like the idea. Like if you have 25 hours and you're home alone and you can't, do a lot of things, you can have sex.
God, I totally forgot. Well, you said it's a double mitzvah, and I've heard the term mitzvah before, but I actually don't know exactly what that means.
So it exactly means commandment. right? It's like a double command from God. But the way it's used in parlance is like that it's a good deed. It's like something good to do for the world.
Yeah, that's the way I've always heard it. You're doing a mitzvah.
If you practice the Friday night to Saturday night, what is that called in Judaism?
Shabbat.
Shabbat. If you practice that, at the end of 25 hours, does something... Do you feel different at that time? Or do you be like, whoa, whoa, got to check my emails. Like, here we go. Got to get on Facebook.
Well, for sure. I mean... Really? By the end of Shabbat, you're a little bit like, I wonder what's going on Facebook.
People are looking forward to it.
But people know that you're not doing Facebook,
but
you're not doing Twitter.
That would be a useful thing, I think, for anybody. We should have a national Shabbat one day where nobody looks at Facebook.
Yeah.
Because I think that a lot of people would go,
no, I understand.
I don't really
understand. I was just wondering what changes at the end of that period. Do you feel, in fact, more calm and meditative, or like you've been contemplating, you've been kind of relaxing, and you feel better? Or do you feel like, oh my God, I got so much to do, I got to get online?
Okay. No, you feel better.
No.
Feel better.
Let me just say, she feels better. You feel like, oh my God, I got to get online. What am I doing? That's podcast. That's what's happening with you.
I only have 8 shows in the queue. I need 10.
That's one thing I wanted to, you reminded me, you were talking about your restrictions, and then you're like, well, you're looking at them as restrictions, but they're not restrictions. But this reminds me of one of the few college classes I ever took that actually taught me anything.
Yeah.
And it was an art class, and I have no artistic ability. But we were supposed to paint something, and the guy said, I'm going to give you some very specific restrictions about the size, about the shape, about the type of materials you can use, whatever. It was like, he's like, and I know it's, and he was like, I know it sounds counterintuitive. I don't think he said it like that, but by having these restrictions, there'll be more creativity inside what you're doing. And it totally made complete sense to me.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing never, I was always like, no, I'm an improv guy. I just go with the wind and I do this. And it's like, having those restrictions made whatever terrible painting I did much better than it would have been if he said, here, you can paint anything with anything.
That's a good example.
There would have been nothing.
And I
should have just quit college right then.
All right. So thank you for some of those answers about Judaism, because truly this, I don't know. I'm learning. I know some things, but it's fascinating.
No, and we're all learning.
One more question. Around the Melrose area, there is like, somebody told me in an Orthodox part of mid-Hollywood, there is like a string around the neighborhood that you can't cross a string.
Oh, I want to ask about this.
Or
yes,
dental
because...
floss. What?
I'm so glad you asked. It's called an A-roof.
How do you spell that?
An A-roof is E-R-U-V.
Whoa.
A-roof.
Never heard that.
I actually, that's like the English transliteration spelling.
Okay.
I can spell it in Hebrew better. But essentially, on Shabbat, you're not allowed to carry things, right? Because you would be lifting and doing work. So, and you can't do work. So they create a sacred space, and they designate it, and you can carry things within the space, like your tallit or your baby or your stroller, whatever you need to carry, or your babka to someone's house, right?
Babka.
So in L.A., it's a huge space, and like the 405 is one barrier of the A-roof. And so, I mean, people say, like, is there an actual string? Yeah, there's people that check the A-roof and make sure that it's up and that there's a string.
That's fascinating.
Wait a minute.
There's not a string along the 405.
No, there's not a lot of string along the 405, but there are places where you can see where the A-roof is marked.
I think that is fascinating.
Yeah, there's so much stuff hanging above our heads. I think I remember seeing this on, with some news special thing. But it's like, you look up, so they're looking at the A-roof, and then you realize how many telephone wires are above your head and this and that. It's like there's stuff just hanging over us in the city.
all the time,
and we never even think about it.
But it's the same way. It's like you never saw a Volvo, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go to buy a Volvo, and you're like, my God, every single person in the world has a Volvo.
Not only do I have that, I have a 1988 Volvo 240 DL, and ever since I got it, that's all I see is how many of these are still on the road, which I consider good. But
the minute you have that awareness, suddenly it's like everybody
has it. Because everyone in the world is so self-centered. That's what people, I think, don't get. It's like you're just thinking about yourself all the time.
Well, yes and no. In other words, like, for instance, now I notice 8-year-old kids because I got an 8-year-old.
Right.
But I only have one kid. When she was 2.
All you noticed were 2-year-olds.
By the way, I remember somebody telling me I should do a parenting podcast because I was such a big stay-at-home mom and did the Moms Club and stuff. And I said, you know what? The thing is, I'm not interested in any other age besides the age my kid is. So now she's 18 months. That's what I care about. And now she's 8 years old. That's kind of all I care about. Like, I'm not, like, this year in third grade, I'm going to get involved in the third grade activities. Like, I can't, I have to put my time.
If an 8-year-old friend The mom comes and drops off her 18-month-old with it. You're like, no, no, no.
Leave
her in the car.
Leave her in the car. It's not my problem. All right, listen, Rabbi Sherry, this new book, Thresholds, is beautiful. I told you I love the cover. Random House did a really nice job. It is about our comfort zone, getting out of your comfort zone. You know, when you hear about people who are in a bad relationship of some kind, but at least they know it's comfortable because they know it's going to be bad. You know, so people find like a comfort in predictability.
Right, because people will stay in a bad situation until it is actually unbearable, and then they'll try to figure out ways to stay because the fear of the unknown is so powerful.
Isn't that something?
It's so sad, and I see it so often because people say to me, like, I'm in the worst situation, and literally someone will describe a situation, I'll literally want to pick them up and be like, you will not go home tonight.
But you can't do that because you're a rabbi. So they come to you and you see it so clearly. Like, they're not even done with the first sentence about, you know, my husband this or that or whatever. And it's obviously a bad situation. Do you want to just jump ahead and say, like, well, then get the hell out?
Yeah, but everybody can fix other people's problems really easily.
Right? But,
like,
you know,
we're really good at other people's problems.
I'm a great amateur analyst. It's like, but what I've learned in my amateur analyst career is nobody can be told anything.
But like, now you're writing a book, and you are kind of explaining and telling
us.
But
not in this book. To think about it, to see it yourself. You have to see it yourself.
What I really think about it is that you're your best guru.
Yeah.
Like, instead of looking outside for the answers, because we look everywhere for confirmation, endorsement, you're your best guru. So I wanted to give people tools so that they could actually solve their own problems and move forward to the next room, as opposed to, Rabbi, tell me what to do next. Most of the time I just sit there listening and people really figure it out for themselves.
You're like the Shirley Kolodny of the Jewish faith. There you go. Thank you, Shirley.
I don't know who Shirley Kolodny is.
From the story.
Oh, from...
She was the lady she went to after school every
day. Right. Sorry, I lost that. I really need to take notes.
Well, here's something about...
Are you like Bob Newhart?
The book, Thresholds. You talk about, toward the end of the book, you talk about the author who wrote the book, The Pursuit of Happiness, and who is happy and why. Mm-hmm. And I found that really interesting, because a lot of people think that if I get wealthy, then it's all going to work out.
I think happiness is completely overrated. Everyone's searching for happiness, and I think it's completely overrated, because the truth is, happiness is fleeting, right? It's completely ephemeral. Yeah. If the guy you like brings you a dozen roses today and it makes you happy, great. But if another guy that you did not like brought you a dozen roses, you'd be like, that was kind of creepy, a little overdone, right? So what makes you happy is very, it's just short-lived. What actually I think makes for a life is finding experiences and moments of real meaning, because that's what lasts forever.
But people want to have their needs met, right?
But they think that money, fame, I mean, look at the cover of any sort of National Enquirer magazine, any tabloid magazine. Every week it's selling this message. If you're famous, if you're rich, if you're popular, you'll be happy. But who cares about
being happy? Here's a quote from the book. A case in point is the famous study of Princeton University that proved empirically, how do you say that?
Empirically.
In a survey of 450,000 Americans conducted in 2008, 2009, that once we reach the earnings of $75,000 per year, our day-to-day happiness does not rise, even if our income does.
It's been proven.
How amazing is that?
Income does not determine your happiness. Once your basic needs are met, your survival needs, your food. I mean, if you're struggling to get your basic needs met, you're not happy, right?
Yeah.
But once those are met, there's no correlation between wealth and happiness. That's why you see some of the people that have the most money and you think they have the most perfect lives every week are getting divorced.
Yeah.
Right?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You can be in the big house on the top of the hill. It just doesn't mean anything, because then there you are in the big house on the top of the hill. Sometimes I fear ever living in a big home, because I fear on a sad day that I'll be sadder, because I'll look around like, I have everything I said I wanted and I'm still sad or whatever.
But I also have another reason you don't live in a big home.
I don't want to
smell the pot that your kids are smoking.
Ah, well,
if the house is too big, you can't smell it.
Well, you're barking up the wrong tree.
Or the parents need to smell, or the children need to smell the pot that Christine
the parents
is smoking.
But very natural for my daughter, because I do smoke marijuana every day, and she does not think, I mean, I don't ever hide that from her.
But
I don't smoke in front of her, but it's not like I don't leave a pipe out on the countertop.
You just made me think of, like, talking about people who think that material wealth is supposed to get them. It's the kind of people who, I mean, at this point, I'm going to say people who support Donald Trump, but before he came on and started to run for president, there are so many people in this country, usually back from the Midwest where we're from, white middle-class people who have, compared to the rest of the earth, everything. Mm-hmm. They have two cars, they have a house, and they have health insurance.
Yeah.
And they feel victimized every day by some mysterious Mexicans or black people or gay people or somebody somewhere. And it's like, I'm always like, how?
It's fair. That's the F word.
Can you possibly feel victimized?
Yeah.
You're making this
it's
up.
It's fair, right?
It's amazing because I remember going, this is, I'll try and tell this story short. Years ago, I go to somebody's house for a barbecue. It's a friend of my then girlfriend's husband or whatever, and we go, and he's got like a house, a nice house, not a big house, on a lake, 45 minutes outside Milwaukee. He's got a boat, and he's got a gazebo. And we go ride the boat, and we sit in the gazebo, and we eat barbecue, and he starts complaining, because he works at the university, about what's the thing where they hire minorities ahead of
affirmative action.
Affirmative action. He starts complaining about affirmative action, and I'm looking around like, we just got out of your fucking boat. And we're sitting in your gazebo in your lake house, and you are in a mid-tier university college in Milwaukee. What the fuck are you complaining about?
Did you say that?
Of course I didn't say that. Oh. I'm from Milwaukee. I sat there and went, oh, yeah.
Mm.
No, I didn't. I didn't agree with him. But I was actually – I didn't say anything because I was younger, and I was literally confused.
But Hannes, I think we go to a different issue. I think it's really bad. We live in a culture of victimization, right? Yeah. Someone murders their parents, and the trial goes down not that they were a murderer, but they were victimized by these people because they gave them too much love and too many things.
Yeah.
It's become our culture. It's everybody on some level is a victim.
Yeah.
And so that's the story or that's the narrative we tell. And I think that's become the problem. I don't think it's about this person or that person. I think it's this culture.
So how do we shake it? How do we shake out of that?
That's a tricky one. I think part of it is actually believing that what we think will bring us happiness and what will bring us, like, enlightenment is not all these things that we pretend to be.
Yes, I missed my point. My point was they have the material things and they're not happy. And so instead of going, okay, maybe there's something wrong with my formula that my house should make me happy, it's like, well, it's obviously the easiest thing is to go, I'm the victim of some other group.
Right.
As opposed to like, wait, maybe my whole concept was wrong.
Right. Maybe I shouldn't be striving for happiness. Maybe I should be striving for something more significant and meaning. Because you do. You look at all these celebrity breakups and you hear they're going to fight over $100 million.
Yeah.
And you're like, you couldn't even stay married for 3 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So here we go from the book again, Thresholds. This is interesting. The title of this bit is How Much Control Do We Really Have? And you refer to a 1996 University of Minnesota study talking about twins, fraternal twins, born from 1936 to 1955. And it concludes that our genes determine about 50% of our happiness in life.
Isn't that interesting?
What's happening about that?
Well, I actually think if you think about 50%, it sounds like a lot. But if you do, if that means you have another 50% that you have control over, 50% of a marathon is a lot, right? That's the difference between 12
miles. But if you get 50% of your parents' mental illness and your genes, if mental illness is in your genes or alcoholism or anything is in your genes. So basically the reason why you brought that up in the book is to tell people like, it's not all in your control.
I think to tell people, look, Christine, I have 4 children and from the day they came out, they were different.
Yeah.
One's disposition is very different from another's. And it had nothing to do with whether my husband and I were good parents, moderate parents, more present, less present. They are 50% made. But that also means that there's another 50% that I'm not in charge of. And I think parents ascribe too much to, like, oh, my kid's all messed up because of me. You don't have that much power. Right?
Yeah,
50%'s already done, and 50% has to do with a lot of other things besides you. So stop worrying about it. They'll be in therapy anyway.
That's so interesting because I do think of that. Like, how am I messing up my kid right now? But yeah.
You know what I do? I keep a list on our refrigerator, and I just write all the things that they'll be in therapy for because I want to save money when they're older so they can just take the list in, show the therapist, and we're good.
So you share a lot
of... You made a spreadsheet.
Right.
You share a lot of personal stuff in this book. You talk about how you didn't see your father for a long, long time. And I had that happen to me. I didn't see my dad for 9 years. And when I got married the first time, he did not walk me down the aisle. And I know your father did not walk you down the aisle. And then later in life, he falls ill and he says to you, I would like to come to where you live and you take care of me.
Right. I was really at this threshold because here I had no relationship with him. And he was a very difficult father and a very demanding father. And sure enough, he gets sick with pancreatic cancer. He calls me one morning and says, I'm going to die. I'm going to die in 6 months. I'm living in Washington, but I'm going to come and you're going to take care of me. And I'd been newly married for 6 months. And all I could think about is I haven't even really explained to my husband the depth of my father and how complicated it is. And now he's asking me to do this. So it was like a real threshold of what do I do? Do I take him on or do I tell him to go somewhere else?
Can you give away the ending and tell us what happened? Or do you want
to? You got to read it in the book.
You got to read the book.
Yeah, because I think everybody has these moments, threshold moments, where you're like, whatever decision I make, it doesn't feel right and it doesn't feel wrong. And I think most people think every decision is like there's a good decision and there's a bad decision. Yeah. But that's not life.
Adam Carolla always says that change is ultimately good. Like he says, like, you know, when you think of the changes you made in your life and how difficult it was at the time and how much it hurt and you were sad, you were depressed, and it ends up being, it's all right. It works out okay. You think so, Hannes?
Yeah, that can be. You know, I'm trying to think of some negative thing like going blind. That would probably not be a change.
No, actually, it's so funny that you said that, Hannes. I just heard a kid who went blind at 20 from some degenerative disease.
Could you bring the show any lower?
Right.
Is it even possible? I'm kidding. Tell
he's
me
the happiest
story. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I love
he's
this.
He's become this motivational speaker. He's had opportunities never had in his life. It's changed his whole family. They've learned all kinds of new things. He talks about it as the greatest thing that ever happened to him. And now his siblings have the same disease and may go blind, and he's talking to them about this isn't the worst thing. And that's a very unexpected
surprise. Actually, I don't know. I mean, you know, my family history is completely Meshuggah. Yeah, I looked it up. No. But on the other hand, I wouldn't be this funny.
Wait, I mean, humor comes from sadness and grief and a bunch of other things.
That's why I'm just fucking hilarious. I know negative things. You know, it's funny. Yeah, because you're talking about happiness. I think, the idea of happiness is a very modern idea that people never used to think about that.
I don't think Socrates was like, am I happy?
Yeah.
Do I feel happy?
And what about, you know, Facebook and the internet? And now we see our friends and they're so successful and their kids are beautiful. And then there's just like this, you see people from high school and what they've accomplished and what you haven't. And then there's this, that's a lot to take on for people.
But I think Facebook's hilarious, right? It's what everybody posts. I love Facebook, by the way.
Yeah.
But who's going to put up, you know, everybody puts up 18 years of marital bliss. Every day has been heaven. Well, if you've been married, guess what?
Yeah.
I would not post that. I would be 18 years and still at it one day at a time.
There are people who have, you know, their mom or dad is sick or somebody's passed. And so they're very sad things do happen. My brother was in an accident. You know, there are sad things.
Right. But I think people tend to shape how they want other people to perceive
them. Yeah. You are definitely putting on the wall what you want to be seen as.
I think people
misinterpret, like, you know, I mean, even we'll put up a picture from here and it'll be like, hey, you know, here you are with you interviewed Bobcat Goldthwait, and like people which we did, and like people will you know, in high school that I know from high school will be like, wow, man, you're really like something in show business. So I'm like, I'm still working 40 hours a week.
But I'm so freaking flipped. I'm so satisfied that we did.
No.
Like, it is a big deal to me that we had him in here.
It's awesomely great, but people assume that since you interviewed an actual person that you heard of, you must live in a mansion in Beverly Hills.
Okay, so you're saying they equate who we're with to money.
Like, and we
they
can
can't
do,
equate
we
that.
We can do the same thing to other people. We say, my kid just graduated from college, and it sounds to you like,
well, we make,
like this, you're making it the most perfect thing that could ever happen to a parent. You have no idea what these people went through.
Yeah,
and we also look at other people's accomplishments and successes and then put them on ourselves that we would feel happy, right? When that's not exactly the case. What makes you happy is very different than what makes me happy.
Yeah.
But we think, oh my God, that big house, $100 million, that would make me happy. It actually, you see lottery winners, they're not so happy.
Yeah, interesting.
You know? Yeah, and people are like, there's a guy I went to high school with who, he's worked for years for this company called Journal Communications. And it's like, you know, he was he got on the radio when he was 18 and all this stuff. And it's great. And now it's been bought by another company, and now he's left Milwaukee and he works in Cincinnati. Now he's our age, and all of a sudden he's got to move to Cincinnati. Not that Cincinnati's such a terrible place, although I've heard bad things. But it's like, it's like you shouldn't have to. You know, he's got all this money, but he's got to uproot himself and go live somewhere else, even though he's a big shot in this company.
So the grass is not necessarily greener on the other side.
We always think it is, and it almost never is.
Don't judge other people's outsides by your insides.
That's right. There you go.
I like that. Yeah.
Hey, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
I absolutely do.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
A fish! I'm so happy I got this. I got 1 minute, right?
Yes.
So we have a fish, J-Ro. It's a betta fish, hilarious fish. It's the most high-maintenance fish I've ever had because I don't believe in pets, and this was my attempt to get my children not to want a dog, and now all they say about the betta fish is that he's mean, he eats the tank, he eats everything in the tank, they're afraid to put another fish in, and they want to get rid of him. So it's done nothing for the dog.
Okay, wait a minute. That, first of all, a 22-second story. I'm impressed. That was wonderful.
I do it fast.
And now, secondly, what do you mean you don't believe in pets?
You know, I don't believe in anything that doesn't grow up and go to college or move out of the house. I don't want anyone living with me at 40. So the fact that matters.
Did you have no pets as a child?
I did not have pets as a child.
Really? Not at all.
I didn't, but now I'm Mr. Pet.
You are Mr. Pet?
Yeah,
well,
I moved in
with my fiance and she had two cats. Then we got a third cat and then we just got a puppy.
Yeah.
No, that's like a menagerie. That's like a little bit.
He doesn't have children, so it's a different...
Yes, I don't have children.
Right, but now people and their pets...
If I had a child, I would absolutely have gotten a dog a long time ago.
Yeah.
Okay, are you trying to help my case or hurt my case, Hannes?
Really? Your case, you've got a vampire fish. I don't know where you came up with this thing. It's eating the tank? It's eating glass?
Yeah, it's a beta fish.
Is it from Sharknado?
You can only have one at a time because they'll eat each other.
They eat everything. But I do have to say, we have the best deal ever, which is that my nanny, when I work, brings her dog Milo, who's like 150 years old.
Oh, that's nice.
And so we have like rent a dog every day.
And what kind of dog is that?
It could be a great business. Ugly.
No, he's old, so he doesn't cause trouble.
No, he has a snaggle tooth and his tongue sticks out, and he and I have an agreement.
You're so funny. Hey, listen, thank you so much for coming, really, and thank you for all the questions. I don't mean to be so naive, but I am, in fact, so there you go.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. I'd like to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Maria Spertolozzi and Sean Merrick and Roddy Swearingen, and you know, Sideshow is just kicking it up a notch, as you know.
It is. Everyone here is wearing a unitard.
Things are happening.
It's like a futuristic
episode from the 70s. The lighting is now good. The microphones are good. Things are good. Happening.
The microphones still aren't labeled, by the way, not to be passive aggressive, but could we label the microphone? Okay, I'm sorry.
They said they would.
Yeah, they'll get right on that.
And on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, you know, he wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
I have no idea.
And on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Rabbi Sherry Hirsch, again, thank you so much for coming. And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
And you can follow me, I'll take you down to the river. Follow me, I'll keep you silent.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.